talk about JetBlue.
Right.
And being from the public sector, and there was only two or three of us in the whole class that were from the public sector.
Yeah.
So we did have an instructor, David Kuehl, and he was more of a public sector person from the from the Kennedy School of Government.
Yeah.
Because they also, believe it or not, have a school for administrators and public officials, and that's what they do. So the union folks get to see what they go through, and they get to see what we went through too. So that's okay. It was just that the only difference I hear was that the management folks, it's like three times more expensive for their program than it was for us. So maybe somebody in Harvard's got a soft side for unions or something.
Yeah.
So we got into case studies about what would you do in this and what would you do in that, and a lot of the answers were, well, we'd go to the politician, and the private sector guys are going, what are you talking about? You should go through the grievance procedure. No. Everything in public service sometimes is connected politically.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know the right political people, you probably could get people, our members, out of a lot more hot water than would you do it, let it go through the legal system.
Right.
Which, unfortunately, is not really the right way to go sometimes. But you know what? We have to use all the tools at our disposal to represent our membership. And that's basically, you know, what my philosophy was. So then we spent a week at the Harvard Law School. I did have an opportunity to go into the Harvard Law Library for a full week and use their computers and look at the vast amount of knowledge and books, and it was just awesome. With that, we also, as we're moving from building to building, we had an opportunity to taste the different varieties of food that's offered during lunch. Basically, what went on was classes started at 9 o'clock. At 10:30, they gave you a break for 15 minutes, where you had an opportunity to go get a cup of coffee or whatever you needed to do. At 10:45, classes started again until 12:30. From 12:30 to 1:30, they give you an hour, a full hour off for lunch, okay? And you just provided your own. You'd go out, and if you wanted to go to McDonald's, if you could run down there if it was close enough, or if you use the cafeteria, which I did mostly, and you know, we had some light fare. It was no, you know, nothing extravagant, but they did have a nice meal. Actually, the School of Education had the best cafeteria, you know, and we enjoyed that a lot. At 1:30 to 5 o'clock was the next session with a 15-minute break somewhere around 3 or 3:30. So we went from 9 to 5 with an hour off for lunch, at which time they also, after the first week, threw us a little curveball. They expected you to run to one of the nearest libraries, the Harvard libraries, and log on because they wanted you to become proficient in using a computer.
Uh-huh.
So we all had to learn how to get into the AFL-CIO website. We were all brought into the HTUP web link, whatever, and we were then given an email address that we had to make up for ourselves. So I was Long Island Prez, you know, CSEA Long Island Prez, that's what my moniker was, at Hotmail, okay?
Oh, Hotmail, yeah.
At Hotmail, MSN. So I learned how to do that. I did have an account with AOL, but that was home, and that was, you know, private, and
right.
You had to do the things their way. So we did. So between trying to grab a bite to eat and getting into the library, we would be asked questions by the director, Elaine Bernard, and you better had gotten on there because it was more of a peer thing, you know, that Nick didn't want to have admitted by Elaine in front of the whole class that he didn't do his assignment or didn't answer yet. So she had a very uncanny way about her of not really embarrassing you, but making the rest of the class aware that maybe you didn't have an email address yet or you hadn't performed you know, up to your expectations, because your union's paying a lot of money for you to be here. So she was really awesome. She was unbelievable. So we wind up doing that, and we take our break around 3:15. 5 o'clock, we're done. You then walk back to your room. I very rarely went out for a beer with the group or anything like that. I was not one of the older folks, but I was one of the more senior students. There were a majority of the folks, I would think, were either in their late 20s or mid-30s. probably more mid-30s. You know, it was a younger group, but we all fit in. We all, you know, I had a lot of similarities with I would say the younger folks, whatever. And we just had a, you know, a great educational experience. Yeah. We had a lot of people that came in, like I said, visiting professors, a lot of different issues. I kept all my books. I took notes every day. I can tell you what every class was about. I kept a note by the date and the time of the session, and that corresponded with the program. I have, I should have brought it with me and I thought about it. I have a book this big, and of course it says Harvard on it because I bought the binder in the bookstore. And I have photos. I love to take photos. I have, I didn't have a digital camera at the time. So I had my regular Olympus, which did an excellent job. I have photos of everything, including the Hasty Pudding House. We went to the parade. We saw Drew Barrymore. I took a photo of her, and it was just, you know, I have all the professors. I had them autograph different things, their books. It was just great. I got so much out of it that eventually we had an opportunity just recently. I'm going to try to rush this to bring you up to date. Okay. I am late. Where CSEA tells us, as officers, the 10 corporate officers, that they have a program through the Education and Training Department that's called, is a concept of called a future search. Mm-hmm. And what is a future search? Well, it's a search. It's a search of the future. Mm-hmm. What a group of people that get put together with my help would meet for a weekend and basically mind meld, you know, the old Vulcan thing from Star Trek, mind meld a group of 49 people, seven groups of seven different people representing seven different issues or ideas to come together in a room for a weekend of training to take us where we've been, where we are, and then where we would like to be. And we did this up at Rensselaerville on the first weekend of March of this year, and it was phenomenal. It was almost as good as Harvard. And we have currently now work groups that are working through the regional committees, because these ideas, I believe, should be organized. And I don't want to subvert or go around what we already have as an organization in place with committees and structure and officers and executive boards, etc. So I made a pledge to my executive board, which is the local presidents from all the different locals, we have 24 of them here, that we would bring back everything to them, and we would work through the regional committees with these work groups on all these crazy different ideas that might come up. And we're talking about mandating what education we should all have.
Seven people of, you know, seven okay. committees and
right. So we
crazy ideas.
So I made a commitment to the the region executive board, which is all the local presidents and the committee chairs and the regional officers, that we would do this in an organized way so nobody would think that they're left out. Mm-hmm. So we have one group which has already made its first report. They met twice. Mm-hmm. It's about reinstituting once again something that I spoke about early in the interview, was the Luddy program.
Yeah.
Because we did get away from it once again. And of course, you know, we're blaming Albany for that, but it takes everyone to drop the ball that way.
Yeah.
So we wrote a position paper that we are requesting from Albany, through Danny or whoever, that we reinstitute the local union training instructor, where we could go out and once again revitalize the membership by giving training, shop steward stuff, and at a reduced cost to the organization, because now you will be training other union members, and it won't cost you to hire someone. It won't cost for the travel or the expense of overnight of bringing someone in from Albany, okay? Mm-hmm. But we also want to do it under the direction of Albany, because we don't want anybody to misunderstand what we're doing, and that means our staff. We don't want the staff to think that we could replace them, or they're not important to us, or any of that kind of stuff, because they are, and we love our staff, and we want them to continue to challenge us in our thinking and what we do, and giving us these different ideas. So that's one report that's already out already and ready to prepare it to send it out to the executive board. We've already brought it to the committee, and we've brought it to the education and training committee because that's where it fits in with the region. They've all, and this just happened just 2 days ago, so it's fresh off the burner. So now I'm ready to implement it and get it out to the region executive board, like I said, and we will then report it out to Albany, and we'll see where we go with it, and hopefully they'll take a bite. Another issue was, I think I started saying, mandatory training. Mm-hmm. We believe, or at least the committee believes, that there are certain officers of the union that need to be trained. And it's not like, do you think you can make it? If you're making a commitment to be an officer of this union, to represent members who pay dues for that representation, we feel that you should have some knowledge and that you would be willing to be trained or to get that knowledge so you can then relate it to the folks that you represent. Sounds, you know, a little common sense to me, but who knows? Who gets elected because they want to be the president, but they don't want to do anything? Who knows? Not us. So that's some of the area that this search has stirred up. They looked at job descriptions for the officers. They looked at accountability, where people go, if people are on release time, if people are provided with a vehicle, if people have different perks, if people have to justify to the people that are paying them through the dues where they are, what they're doing, how they're doing it, are they successful, give us a report. Things of that nature. So it's a fascinating thing. Yeah. And of course, it goes right in with where I was all about through the Harvard stuff, about learning how to get all of this stuff together and hit a different level of training or education. Yeah. And I just thought it was great. It fit right in like a piece of a puzzle. And so that's where we are, and we're still continuing.
I'll tell you what's also important about that is to communicate the fact that you're doing that
exactly
to the rank and file.
Exactly, which I am not happy about.
Do it in the workforce.
Well, you just hit a big button for me, because we got one sentence in the issue in March, and now I just saw another publication for Region 6 who did one on just an industry.
Yeah.
They took a future search and they just delved into an industry future search, where we did a future search that's going to affect the whole region, which might also, in some of the issues, might affect the whole state of the organizational structure.
Right.
Because we talked about things like condensing the president and the first vice president or the executive vice president office into one office. Mm-hmm. We talked about condensing, like AFSCME does, the secretary and the treasurer into one office. Would that work? Would it not work? But we put together what we called this mind map, which we have photos of, which hopefully will make an issue, where we generate all these different ideas, and then we vote and prioritize what we felt as a group of 49, what was the most important things or issues. And out of that came these seven different categories. We even got into one about national health care.
Uh-huh.
We have two people that they thought that was a very paramount type of thing. There was only two that chose to do that. But out of the 49, we all thought that was one of the seven that was important.
Yeah.
But although we only have two, because there were others that wanted to do other things, and they didn't feel they could be divided up.
That's a big idea.
But it's just incredible. So they're all meeting. They're all, we're just going to see where we
that's
take it.
Wonderful.
And that's
so
where we're at.
You got a new communications guy, right?
Yes.
Orlando?
Yes. Yes.
I haven't met him yet, but let him write that
up. Well,
there's a new editor of the workforce, too. So it's a transition period. But that'll get in.
Oh, it will. We're going to make sure it gets in. That's for sure.
Now, I've got a couple more questions.
Sure.
I'm going to let you go.
Okay.
Got to go back to Ben Gumman and the glass eye story.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I'm the local president. And no, I'm not the local president. Frank Fasano is the local president.
Okay.
I'm the first VP. And Frank never shared a room. Frank just felt, whatever, whether it was because he wanted to bring his wife with him, whatever, which is a good reason why you don't share a room, because you have your wife with you. But he didn't take her often, but he really was just not that type of guy that would ever share a room. So he never did. I shared rooms with different people at times. On this trip, For whatever reason, I don't have to share a room. I'm the first vice president. Now, Ben Gumman is sharing a room with a guy named Bob Varell. Bob Varell is probably 450 pounds to 500 pounds. He's a very big man. He's still walking on his own, and he didn't need a jitney yet, but that comes on later. Yeah. What winds up happening is Bob goes out drinking, and Ben Gumman is asleep in the bed. Okay? So Bob comes in, and Ben is looking off to one side. Now, his eye is open, so and the TV is on. So Bob, being not with all quite all his facilities, is speaking and talking away to Ben Gumman, who he believes is awake. Well, you kind of know what happened. He's got a glass eye. The eye was open. He was sound asleep. And Bob is yakking away, thinking that he was awake. And that was just one of those crazy stories that, you know, it was just another crazy Ben Gumman story. Right.